by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. A lot has been happening this week. The assassination of Soleimani over in Iraq. And we're going to start off with an interview that Laura Ingraham did with President Trump. And he's stating in there that there was an imminent threat to four of our embassies and other possible targets also. But here we go right now.
Mr. President, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Laura.
Today, Mike Pompeo gave a very forceful press conference on the fallout from the Iranian jetliner going down. His concern is that people aren't understanding the imminent nature of the threat of Soleimani. And he was pressed on that today. He said there were large-scale attacks planned on U.S. facilities. But he didn't go more specific. Don't the American people have a right to know what specifically was targeted without revealing methods and sources?
Well, I don't think so, but we will tell you that probably it was going to be the embassy in Baghdad. You saw that happening. You saw it with all of the men, very few women, circling it and circling it very strongly and very viciously, knocking out windows and trying to get in, and they were close to getting in. And I called out the military. They said, we'll have it there tomorrow. I said, nope, you'll have it there today. We're not going to have another Benghazi on our hands. And we did a really amazing job. I got no credit for it, but we never get credit for anything, and that's okay. In the meantime, we had the greatest economy we've ever had, a lot of other things. But I think you would have had another Benghazi had we not acted quickly. That could have been stopped, and this was stopped. And we had our Apaches going there, the great helicopters, and they were dropping flares all over the place, and a lot of things were happening. They had action real fast, and everybody disappeared.
Did they have large-scale attacks planned for other embassies? And if those were planned, why can't we reveal that to the American people? Wouldn't that help
case? I can reveal that I believe it would have been four embassies, and I think that probably Baghdad already started. They were really amazed that we came in with that kind of a force. We came in with very powerful force and drove them out. You know, that ended almost immediately. But Baghdad certainly would have been the lead, but I think it would have been four embassies. Could have been military bases. Could have been a lot of other things, too. But it was imminent. And then all of a sudden, he was gone.
Why is Nancy Pelosi describing her briefing as dismissive and disdainful? Mike Lee said it was insulting, the intel briefing. What wasn't said to mollify the concerns of some of your strongest supporters, like Mike Lee?
Yeah, he is a great supporter. He's a friend of mine. He called me just a little while ago, and he said, you know, I just wanted to get some more information. And he was, look, I've also had calls from some of the senators, some of the congressmen, said it was the single best briefing. One person said they've been there for 10 years. It's the single best briefing they've ever had. One said 20 years, the single best military briefing they've ever had. I understand what Mike had. Mike wanted certain things said, and we just couldn't say them. We could probably say maybe individually to him, and he's certainly a trustworthy person.
Are you worried that the Democrats can't be trusted with classified information? Because that's kind of what it sounded like when Pence gave that interview and talked about sources and methods the other day.
I am worried about it, certainly. I am worried about it. Can you imagine? Here we are, split-second timing, executed like nobody's seen in many, many years on Soleimani. Can you imagine they want us to call up and speak to a crooked, corrupt politician, Adam Schiff? Oh, Adam, we have somebody that we've been trying to get for a long time. We have a shot at him right now. Could we meet so that we can get your approval, Adam Schiff? that, he'd say, well, let's do it in a couple of days. Oh, okay, let's meet in a couple. It doesn't work that way. Number one. Number two, they leak. Anything we give will be leaked immediately. You'll see breaking news. We're about to attack in 25 minutes or do something. And by the way, I'm not somebody that wants to attack. I probably could have attacked 5 times, 10 times having to do with Iran. I've been very guarded because I don't want to do that. But we may have to do something. We have to be in a position where we can do it, even from the negotiating standpoint. But hopefully it won't be necessary. We have tremendous sanctions. They're doing very poorly. They have riots all over their country. And they could straighten it out easy, but it's up to them.
Speaking of the sanctions, Ilhan Omar, I think, said today that this is akin to economic warfare against Iran, even though she supports sanctions against Israel.
Yeah. She hates Israel. She hates Jewish people. You just have to take a look at her rhetoric. It's incredible what's happened to the Democrats in Congress. They used to be supportive of Israel. Today they're supportive of her and Tlaib. That's another real winner. Tlaib and AOC, who knows nothing. AOC knows nothing. Poor student, poor everything. And then she comes and she talks about the Green New Deal, and all these poor fools say, oh, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful? But, you know, as I said last night in Ohio, I don't like talking about the Green New Deal. It's too early. I want to save it for about 2 weeks before, because they may change their mind.
Bernie Sanders was out, you're not surprised to hear this, discussing Iran, what happened, and he basically said this.
Just as we were led into Vietnam and Iraq by lies, the Trump administration is misleading us on Iran. They have justified the assassination of Qasem Soleimani by claiming that he was planning imminent attacks. And yet they produce no evidence that would justify this claim, not even in a classified setting.
I don't see it happening. We are there for a very, very strong reason. They cannot have nuclear weapons. The Iran nuclear deal signed by President Obama gave $150 billion, and that's when the real terror started. They took that money and they used it all over the place. You look at Yemen, you look at all of the things that were happening, including Syria. They were using, Palestine gave $1.8 billion in cash, $1.8 billion in cash, green cash, beautiful green cash. You almost say, where do they, how do they have the power to do this? Plane loads of cash. And instead of Iran saying, thank you very much, that's really nice, let's go and get along, let's do well, let's do deals together, let's build buildings in Iran, they said death to America. And they said it when they were signing. When Kerry signed, and by the way, Kerry violated the Logan Act.
He's out there just slamming you.
Oh, no, he totally violated. This man totally violated the Logan Act with his conversations, okay? But when Kerry was out there and making the deal, and they have people screaming, death to America, death to America. I say, who signs a deal while they're screaming, death to America?
Well, they're saying you destabilized the Middle East after campaigning as a man of restraint, non-interventionism. Elizabeth Warren is saying this. Kerry's saying this. All the old Obama folks are out there. Susan Rice. They're all kind of waiting in the wings. They're like, see, he's the guy that we told you he was.
If you look at the Middle East right now, it's much tamer than it was when I got in. When I got in, it was just all over the place. Number one, we got rid of the caliphate, the ISIS caliphate. We have tens of thousands of ISIS prisoners. We've killed most of their fighters. We've gotten rid of ISIS. Now they come back and we take care of it. Other people should take care of it. Other countries should take care of it. Europe should take them back.
Is NATO going to actually step up? I know they committed to doing more in the Middle East, but what specifically is NATO going to contribute that's going to take some of the burden off the American taxpayers?
So when I came in, as you know, NATO was virtually a dead organization. It had no money. Nobody was paying except us. Practically nobody was paying. If you look at a chart of money and funds received, it looked like a roller coaster down. Now, and Secretary Stoltenberg, I think he's terrific. In my first year, I raised $130 billion from them, not from us. And now he just announced $530 billion, all because of me. He's my biggest salesman, my greatest salesman, Secretary Stoltenberg. But I said to him, look, you're there for Russia and Europe, okay? By the way, NATO is much more for Europe than it is for us, and yet we pay
What are we protecting them from now, all the money we're spending
them.
In NATO? Who are we protecting them from?
Well, they build an office building for $3 billion. They do lots of things that they shouldn't be doing before I got here. but I raised a lot of money. We can use NATO in other locations. We can use NATO as an example in the Middle East, and that's what we should do. And I think, frankly, it's more palatable to countries in the Middle East if an international force comes in rather than just the United States. And from our standpoint, let somebody else pay for it. Why are we always paying? We pay for everything. One thing, I moved our troops out of Syria, on the border between Turkey and Syria. That turned out to be such a successful move, Laura. Look what happened. Now they protect their own. They've been fighting over that border for 1,000 years. Why should we do it? And then they say he left troops in Syria. You know what I did? I left troops to take the oil. I took the oil. The only troops I have are taking the oil. They're protecting the oil. I took
over the
oil.
We're taking the oil. We're not taking the oil.
Well, maybe we will. Maybe we won't.
They're protecting the facility.
I don't know. Maybe we should take it. But we have the oil. Right now, the United States has the oil. So they say, he left troops in Syria. No. I got rid of all of them, other than we're protecting the oil. We have the oil.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting today that after this strike, Mr. Trump told associates he was under pressure to deal with General Soleimani, take him out, from GOP senators he views as important supporters in the coming impeachment trial in the Senate, associates said. Sounds like you got a leaker here in the White House or someone. What is it? Just fake?
They just made it up. It's fake news.
Okay.
I used to think leakers, they just make it up. They're all very dishonest. Most of them are really dishonest. I mean, 80% are dishonest. And I mean, really dishonest. They made that story up.
So no concern about Lindsey Graham?
Well, they don't need, no, not at all. By the way, absolutely not at all. We have tremendous support. Look, in the House, we were 196-0, and we got 3 Democrats. So, therefore, it was bipartisan, I guess you could say. We got nothing. They had nothing. We didn't lose one Republican vote. As you know, that's very unusual. In the Senate, I think I have the same, if not more, support. I don't have to do that. I would never compromise what we're doing with Iran and potential war and all of the things that we're doing. So
we're not doing Bush 2.0 here. This is not Bush 2.0.
You know,
this is not WMD.
You know what I want in the Middle East? I don't want people having nuclear weapons because they'll use them. I don't want people having nuclear weapons. That's my biggest thing.
Well, John Kerry was out there yesterday saying, well, you guys got out of the Iran deal, and that's what's caused all
this tension. By the way, you know how bad the Iran deal was? The Iran deal, I did a great thing getting out of the Iran deal. They gave them $150 billion. They gave them the $1.8 billion. Forget that. You couldn't do inspections of the most important locations. And you know another big thing? They have the right to do ballistic missiles. We couldn't go into areas and look. We'd have to give massive notices. So if they were doing something, they could clean them up. It was ridiculous. But most importantly, it expires. This is a short-term agreement. And now, once it expired, they have an absolute clear, unstopped path to have nuclear weapons. Unstopped. In a very short period of time, the deal that President Obama made with John Kerry, who may be the worst negotiator I've ever seen, that deal expires. And you know what? Once it expires, you can't do what I did. I mean, because they have a deal that says once it expires, they can do what they want to do. You cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon. That's what I'm doing.
Pete Buttigieg and other Democrats, I predicted this when I talked to Mike Pompeo yesterday, are actually blaming your moves against Iran for the downing of that commercial jetliner in Tehran, the night of the strikes by Iran to our Iraqi facilities. Your reaction to that charge?
Well, a couple of people started that, and they got hit real fast by a lot of different people, not me. I think it's just low life. Look, he's not going anywhere. He was a lousy mayor of a place that is not doing well, and Indiana is doing unbelievably well. Indiana, the state, had the best year they've ever had. Thank you very much. But that city was badly run. You look at what's going on.
Jackie Spire saying
he's going nowhere,
too.
And she's another beauty. I mean, take a look at her past. Check out her past, please.
The Iraqi prime minister has notified Mike Pompeo about potential plans, drawing up plans for U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq, period. You ran on pulling out of the Middle East.
I don't mind.
Why not use this opportunity to say, we're done?
I'm okay with it. By the way,
you're okay with removing our troops from Iraq?
That's what they say publicly. They don't say that privately. Because if we leave, that means they're not going to be able to handle it.
But why not leave?
I'm not so bad with it. You know, when I heard that, I said, You know, I have it down to 5,000 troops. We had many, many troops there in Iraq. And we're there only in a training. We train them. But if they'd want us to leave, but they speak different publicly than they do privately.
But aren't we sending more troops to the region as we speak?
We're sending more to Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia's paying us for it. You know, we're doing something that nobody's ever done. I said to Saudi Arabia, we have a very good relationship with Saudi Arabia. I said, listen, you're a very rich country. You want more troops? I'm going to send them to you, but you've got to pay us. They're paying us. They've already deposited $1 billion in the bank. We are going to help them, but these rich countries have to pay for it. South Korea gave us $500 million. They never gave us any. They gave us $500 million. I said, you got to help us along. We have 32,000 soldiers in South Korea protecting you from North Korea. You've got to pay. And they gave us $500 million. I mean, you sort of have breaking news because nobody wants to report that stuff. I'm not sure anybody knows it. I might be sort of saying it. You have some. I mean, it's good stuff. But they're a wealthy country. They build all your television sets. They took that away from us. They build the ships. They build a lot of things. I said, look, we're protecting you. You got to pay. They paid us $500 million. They're going to pay us a lot more.
Do you think that Iraq should repay the American taxpayer for these bases?
Sure.
For we've done there?
You heard that from me.
Yeah,
okay? I said we built one of the world's most expensive airport facilities anywhere in the world. I mean, I wish we had it in New York. I wish we had it in Washington. We built runways that are 15,000 feet long. At LaGuardia, they're 7,000 feet long. In fact, I think they're 20,000 feet long over there, and deep, thick concrete and steel. Nobody ever built runways like this. Okay, it was way overbuilt, but that's okay. But we have billions of dollars into that. I said, if we leave, you got to pay us. If we leave, you have to pay us for embassies. You have to pay us for the money we put in.
How are you going to collect?
Well, we have a lot of their money right now. We have a lot of their money. We have $35 billion of their money right now sitting in an account. And I think they'll agree to pay. I think they'll agree to pay. Otherwise, we'll stay there.
There was a special team following Soleimani's two car convoy right before the missiles went in, and they arrived there a minute or two afterward and verified Soleimani's death. But anyway, this is some additional interview and information this Friday night about the convoy, that the special operations that was being carried out following Soleimani before the hit by the missiles. Here we go now.
Breaking news just minutes ago from Iran, what the military there is now admitting about that downed Ukrainian plane. But first, a Fox News at Night exclusive tonight. Brand new pictures from the scene of the successful U.S. airstrike that killed Iran's top military general, Qassem Soleimani. You will see those images only here on Fox News at Night. We've got Fox Team coverage for you tonight. Benjamin Hall live on the ground in the Middle East. Howard Kurtz examining the media's spin on the U.S.-Iran showdown. But we begin with correspondent Leland Vittert and that exclusive look inside the U.S. airstrike that took out Soleimani. Good evening, Leland.
Evening, Shannon, to you. And we're learning a lot more about that operation from the beginning to the end that resulted in the death of Qassem Soleimani. It went far beyond a drone strike and included U.S. Army Special Operations soldiers on the ground that actually followed his convoy.
This is a picture of the aftermath obtained by Fox News from a member of the U.S. government. The Special Operations soldiers were following Soleimani's convoy from the Baghdad airport and about a half a mile behind when the missile from the Reaper drone hit. They were on the scene within a minute or two. Immediately following the drone strike, they did what in the business is called a bomb damage assessment and took pictures of the scene, along with confirming that the drone got the right car and Soleimani was dead.
Many of the pictures we have obtained include graphic and close-up pictures of the Iranian general's body. We're not going to show you those tonight. They're simply too gruesome. He is missing limbs and is grossly disfigured. A source who both served in Iraq and saw the pictures noted that Soleimani died in much the same way the Americans he killed died.
This picture is taken from the other direction, showing Soleimani's body burning next to the car. We have blurred the body. Our source indicates the American assets dragged the body from the scene, put the fire out, and then identified the Iranian general. They took pictures of Soleimani's possessions, including poetry books, two of his weapons, both a pistol and assault rifle, along with wads of cash, including Iranian currency, with the face of the Ayatollah. Ordinarily, his cell phone and other electronics would be taken for forensic analysis to see who he was talking to. However, as you can see by the charred remains of a phone in the upper left-hand corner of this picture, the Hellfire missile and ensuing fire made that impossible.
And to quote Senator Mike Lee, if you see a wounded veteran missing a limb or who is seriously disfigured, the odds are pretty good that they were wounded by an IED that was designed and deployed, Shannon, under the direction of General Soleimani.
Okay, incredible scoop that you got there. People see it here, and we'll have more on the web.
And more on the web and a little bit more this weekend as well.
Okay, Leland, thank you.
This next clip is a very short clip in Farsi. It's only 39 or 40 seconds of protesters protesting the way that the Iranian government was covering up the downing of that plane. And I think it was an accidental downing by their own surface-to-air missiles. And possibly, what I'll say about this is that the plane that took off from Tehran, you know, airport, just immediately, within a few hours of the barrage that was launched by Iran, should have never been given permission to take off. So I point the finger at the airport administrators. They should have never let any traffic take off from that airport during this period because of possibilities just like this accident that ensued. But anyway, here's a clip of protesters protesting the mishandling of their government. And this is just setting off new protests in Iran. The people are not happy with the government, but this is just a quick example. Here we go now. What they're saying in that protest is Commander-in-Chief Khamenei, resign, resign. Commander-in-Chief Khamenei, resign, resign. And there were hundreds of people chanting that in front of Tehran's Amir Kabir University. So we're looking at a renewed episode of protest from the people. 100 people is not just a small group. It's not an overwhelming group. The turnout for Soleimani's funeral was in the hundreds of thousands. Even 59 people were trampled in one of the problems there. But anyway, this is what we're seeing over there now. It's possibly a reigniting of the unsettledness of the population. They're not happy with the regime. These foundations set up by the mullahs and the Revolutionary Guard have pilfered and plundered their own treasury. So the people are picking up crumbs. And so they're not really happy at all. And this is causing dissension within Iran. And so this is a big, big problem. Now, coming up next, we've got some recent leaks from the Justice Department on the Huber investigation of Clinton and on the Uranium One investigation and also the foundation, the Clinton Foundation. I'm going to play some older clips and then bring us forward, but we've had some very, very suspicious suspicions about this Huber investigation. He was ordered to review certain documents and so forth. Many of the people predicted all along that this was just a put-up job, a psyops job to distract us from other more important investigations that were going on. So this is a clip that goes back to about the 10th of December of 2018. And this is a clip that it's sort of insightful in the way that it brings up the questions here of what really what has been going on concerning this. Is it a real investigation or not? And so this first one is a Lou Dobbs clip of last December, and then we'll bring it more current after that. So here we go now with this Lou Dobbs. And he's interviewing Mark Meadows about possible whiskey whistleblower ignoring whistleblowers. Here we go now.
Joining me now to discuss, among other things, the Mueller witch hunt, a fired FBI Director James Comey's testimony this week, and the latest developments concerning an investigation into Clinton Foundation wrongdoing. Congressman Mark Meadows, a member of the House Oversight Committee, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman, great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Lou.
Let's turn first to the letter that you have sent, questioning the very foundation of the John Huber investigation that we thought was supposed to be progressing at a much better rate than the Mueller witch hunt.
Well, obviously today we sent a letter. If you'll recall, Lou, and some of your viewers will recall, many months ago we called for a special prosecutor and said, listen, if we're going to have a special prosecutor to look into President Trump, then we need a special prosecutor to look into the Clinton email server issue, the Clinton Foundation. And yet what we found, I found just recently, is we have some whistleblowers that gave information to John Huber over 8 months ago, and the first contact that they received was last Friday, a phone call around 2 o'clock. And I just find the lack of follow-up to be extremely curious at best and very troublesome at worst.
And in one instance, one of the whistleblowers, the FBI, moving straight ahead against him as if he did not have whistleblower protection. As a matter of fact, as if he weren't an American citizen by some of the accounts.
Well, there was reporting of that. That's actually a different whistleblower than the ones we have coming in before our committee here in right at a week now. We actually had the hearing set up for this week on the Clinton Foundation. Right. A number of allegations, Lou, about improper use of 501c3 tax-exempt status, about misappropriation of funds. They're all allegations, but we need to get to the bottom of it. And literally, the whistleblowers have been doing patriotic duty. I look forward to learning more. We have thousands of documents that we're now reviewing, and hopefully the FBI will be following course on that as well.
Congressman, why don't the American people know more about John Huber, what he's focused on, how long he's been working, where he's working, what he's taking up? There is so little knowledge by comparison to the Mueller. Now, you can argue that the Mueller operation leaks like a sieve. Perhaps it's a positive, perhaps it's a negative. You tell me.
Well, I think you have two different standards. You have one that applies to President Donald Trump, and that means that every single bit of media attention goes to Bob Mueller and what he's doing. And yet, I would suggest tonight that there's more evidence of wrongdoing potentially on the Clinton Foundation than what we have with regards to the Russian-Trump collusion, because there is no collusion, and yet we seem to focus on that. And you're right. He's from Utah. He's not a household name. I've never met him, and I've been actively involved in oversight for going on 6 years now.
So how do we explain the bizarre, absurd, farcical nature of these special counsels? Because on whichever side of the thing you're on, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, this is idiotic. You've got a special counsel who, with a foundation of almost a year of FBI investigation, has not been able to produce a scintilla of evidence on collusion and continues to take up 12 Russian entities, individuals, who will never be brought to justice or have any accounting in our judicial system. And, you know, the next thing we know, late night phone calls with Roger Stone, with the president. This is a kind of idiotic nonsense that is at least boiling over or leaked on purpose from the special counsel.
Well, you've got 2.5 years of an investigation, Lou, that really has produced nothing. Now, we want to say, well, there have been people indicted and they've lied to the FBI and this and that. Yeah. But even some of those charges, and we're going to have a sentencing, I believe, of Mr. Flynn, General Flynn, here in the coming days. But even with all of that, what they do is they leak out just enough information, or they put out enough of a press statement, or indict this person, like you say, 12 Russians that will never be brought to justice, just enough to feed the narrative to keep it going. And I think the American people are tired of it. I know that I believe that they need to end this Mueller witch hunt. and they need to make sure that what happens is we return this democracy back to the people and let them decide for themselves. Bring the charges if there's charges.
And as you point out in your letter, this is, to me, an entirely appropriate question. What in the world are you, if I can summarize, what in the world are you doing, John Huber, if you're a special counsel? Why isn't there some accountability here? I have no idea what in the world kind of government we've got right now, but it doesn't make a lick of sense to me, frankly. There's no accountability. There's no oversight. And there seems to be no authority being exerted over either special counsel by the attorney general.
Well, there's not, and we need an attorney general that is willing to oversee this. That's why Huber was put in by the previous attorney general, Jeff Sessions. But more importantly, I want one message to come clear tonight, Lou. There may be wonderful work that's going on. In fact, I believe that there is significant work going on in Little Rock, Arkansas, as it relates to the Clinton Foundation. But what we have is we've been given a task to this individual, John Huber. He needs to give updates to Congress. That's what he was charged with. We have that from the special prosecutor.
Well, neither
we need
party,
him to do the same.
If neither party, neither special counsel, gives a report to Congress as required, is being overseen by Congress, is the constitutional responsibility, as you well know, and if the Attorney General's office doesn't seem to hold anyone accountable or set limits, we're in a hell of a mess, aren't we?
Well,
I've got to go here.
Yeah, we are in a mess, but it's time that we have one standard for Donald Trump and the same standard for everybody else.
Absolutely.
Now, this next interview, also by Lou Dobbs, is an interview with John Solomon. And it's a little bit longer. It's more recent. It's just within the last couple of days here. And they're saying that John Solomon is putting forward his opinion that we need a lot more investigation onto the foundation and to the Uranium One problems with Hillary. So here we go now with Lou Dobbs and John Solomon in the last few days.
The Justice Department is not commenting tonight on a report that John Huber's inquiry into alleged crimes by Hillary Clinton has ended without charges. The Washington Post reporting current and former officials never expected to find any evidence of wrongdoing. However, some Justice Department officials are telling Fox the investigation is not yet officially closed. Our next guest, contacted by Huber after he wrote about whistleblower evidence alleging Clinton Foundation wrongdoing. Joining us tonight, award-winning investigative reporter, Fox Business contributor, John Solomon, who has contributed more than any other journalist to what we know about Spygate. John Solomon, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Lou.
Let's start with John Huber, who seems to be a figment of the Justice Department's imagination, or at least Jeff Sessions, while he was Attorney General for that brief interregnum. What is going on? How did we get here with Mr. Huber?
So my reporting very early on indicated that this wasn't a very serious referral. I think early on Fox, I might have even said it might be a head fake. You know, it was at a time when Jeff Sessions was having a difficult relationship with the president. He was frustrated by a lot of different issues. And I think this was a deflection, an effort to make the president happy by announcing something. But very early on, I saw zero activity of investigating. It looked like just a paper review. And that was confirmed a year ago, because a year ago I broke a story saying in 2017 a couple of former federal investigators filed a whistleblower complaint, and the Justice Department didn't even know about it. And right after I wrote that, the whistleblowers and myself both got calls from Huber's office saying, where are these documents? I never got a chance to return the call, but the whistleblowers did, and it surprised them that Huber, who was supposed to be doing an investigation, didn't know something as basic as this. So I think from the beginning this was doomed to be an empty investigation. There are a lot of important questions that still need to be resolved, but I don't think they're going to be resolved by the Huber investigation.
Well, obviously not with John Huber, but at the same time we're getting some indication that the William Barr-led Justice Department is not ready, even though he has done absolutely nothing in those years as
some form of investigator. You can style it as you wish. Certainly not a successful one. We're sitting here with real serious issues, including, as you say, whistleblowers, Uranium One scandal, still right. Not any part of an investigation, a meaningful one, by the Justice Department. Where are we? I mean, this is the idea that $145 million changed hands for what is effectively 20% of America's uranium assets is a big damn deal by anyone's standards.
Yeah, and you know, there's a place where John Durham may cross over into the Huber atmosphere, if we could, or into the circle there. And I think it's on the question of, did the CFIUS, did the Obama administration review that approved Uranium One, did they learn before they approved it there was a criminal investigation of Rosatom that showed that Rosatom was engaged in the United States on U.S. soil in bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and the corrupting of our nuclear transportation company? I'm getting strong signals that the Justice Department has confirmed that there was a warning given to the CFIUS before they went ahead and approved this sale anyways. That could be an area where John Durham can open up where John Durham never really looked.
Yes, CFIUS, we should explain, is the Committee for Foreign Investment in the United States.
That's right.
The Secretary of Treasury, the Secretary of State, who then was none other than Hillary Clinton, the Obama administration driving that committee. It was a rubber stamp, by the way, not only under the Obama administration, but previous administrations
That's
as
right.
well, which is part of the problem.
One of the things is that President Trump and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin have really changed the CFIUS.
Absolutely.
And they're giving a much more aggressive review, which I think should be comforting to Americans to know that national security has been put forefront for the first time in these CFIUS reviews for the first time in a long time.
Your thoughts about the president's assertion to Laura Ingraham that he will insist upon executive privilege, whether if John Boehner decides he's going to testify under subpoena.
Yeah. It's not surprising. I think the president has talked many times about protecting the privilege not only for himself but for future presidents. And there's no more sensitive relationship than the national security advisor and the president. Doesn't surprise me. We'll see if it gets to that point, but not surprising to me at all.
Well, surprising to me, I said Boehner instead of Bolton, which
Bolton,
is what
yes,
I did.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not. I'm the one who conjured that up from the recesses of my addled brain. John Solomon, thanks so much. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Lou. Good to be
Good
with
to see you.
Next is an additional clip from Judicial Watch, and they're very negative about getting anywhere with this Hillary Clinton investigation on Uranium One. Are the foundations. But anyway, Judicial Watch is having trouble going into court. It's as if the Justice Department is on Hillary's side and against them, trying to undermine their efforts. But this is really, really deep state intrigue. And I just think the corruption level is so deep, and the swamp is much deeper than I think President Trump could have ever realize. Anyway, we go here with Judicial Watch, Tom Fenton.
So we have these new Clinton emails that show Clinton used text messages for government work, and that showed, again, classified information being sent along non-secure systems. It further underscores the need for a fresh, unbiased, competent, thorough criminal investigation of the Clinton email issue. And frankly, the related FBI, Justice Department, and State Department cover-up that we've been exposing. Because remember, Judicial Watch has been getting discovery, taking in testimony and witnesses. I want to tell you something. The Justice Department was in court last month, I think. They sent six lawyers, Justice Department and State Department did. Hillary Clinton had two lawyers. Cheryl Mills, her top deputy, had two lawyers there, all working against our lawyers in Judicial Watch in that courtroom. They were trying to shut down our case, even as the FBI is finding more evidence of criminal activity, more emails that were responsive to our requests. It's even worse than that, because in our litigation, the Justice Department is coordinating with Hillary Clinton's lawyers against Judicial Watch. They're on the same team. It's the equivalent in FOIA of a joint defense agreement. I don't know why Attorney General Barr allows that to go on. I don't know why they are still protecting the misconduct of Hillary Clinton. Well, I kind of do know why. Institutionally, it's happening. But the leadership of the Justice Department needs to take ownership of this and stop it. The news this week out of the Washington Post, unsurprisingly, this is the headline. Justice Department winds down Clinton-related inquiry once championed by Trump. It, quote, it found nothing of consequence. Well, let me tell you this. I told you the Justice Department was never really investigating this. Nothing's been going on. I tweeted out in response to this, a non-investigation, unsurprisingly, leads to non-prosecutions. From the Washington Post, the Justice Department inquiry launched more than 2 years ago to mollify conservatives clamoring for more investigations of Hillary Clinton has effectively ended with no tangible results, and current and former law enforcement officials said they never expected the effort to produce much of anything. I told you that from the get-go. You may think this is the liberal Washington Post, but that's the truth. Sessions appointed John Huber, the U.S. attorney in Utah, to, quote, review whether to recommend a further investigation of these issues. He wasn't doing an investigation. He was looking at some documents, reading newspaper articles. I don't know what he was doing. He never talked to Judicial Watch. Sessions was facing pressure to appoint a special counsel. Deep State didn't want to do it, so they appointed John Huber and pretended that was enough. As part of his review, Huber examined documents and conferred with federal law enforcement officials in Little Rock who are handling a meandering probe into the Clinton Foundation, people familiar with the matter said. Current and former officials, so this is current Justice Department officials leaking this, said that Huber had largely finished and found nothing worth pursuing, though his assignment had not formally ended and no official notice had been sent to the Justice Department or to the lawmakers. Sessions did not appoint a second special counsel, but weeks later sent a letter to Huber telling him to, quote, as I said, review a wide array of issues related to Clinton. They didn't do anything. It was a sop to try to distract conservatives on the Hill who are outraged, to distract the president who was outraged, who had run on holding Hillary Clinton accountable. It didn't ever distract the Judicial Watch. We knew nothing was happening. From the start, this shows you the cynicism of the deep state. If I were the president, I would call in the attorney general and ask what's going on here. But from the start, senior officials inside the Justice Department viewed Huber's task as unlikely to lead to anything of significance beyond appeasing those angry lawmakers and the president. They're treating the president like a joke. We didn't expect much of it, neither did he, said one person familiar with the matter, who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity because of persistent political sensitivities connected to the 2016 election. Of course, it's an ongoing criminal matter, in theory, so it's illegal for them to be talking about it. And as time went on, a lot of people just forgot about it. Boy, they're treating you like suckers, America. What the president should do is appoint a special counsel outside the Justice Department, outside the FBI, to investigate Hillary Clinton. And first of all, I don't know this is true, but it sounds true because I've seen no evidence Huber's doing a serious criminal investigation. I've seen no evidence the Justice Department's doing a serious criminal investigation of anything related to abuse of President Trump either, in terms of the Russia spying. The president, to the degree he is doing this, I don't know if he is or not, is making a mistake if he's relying on the Justice Department to investigate itself, the FBI to investigate itself, because as I highlighted here, the Justice Department is defending Hillary Clinton in federal court, and we're supposed to be surprised that they don't want to prosecute her. They're defending her. They're calling her lawyers. saying, what are we going to do about Judicial Watch? How are we going to stop them? Here's a heads up on the, what they're asking for. They're on Hillary's side. And, of course, the Washington Post is gleefully reporting there's nothing there. They're not doing Uranium One. They're not doing the Clinton Foundation, which Judicial Watch, not the Justice Department, not Congress uncovered the pay-to-play schemes where donors, foreign nationals, were working through the Clinton Foundation to get special favors. Foreign governments were working through the Clinton Foundation to get special favors from Hillary Clinton at the State Department. Hillary Clinton promised the foundation would have nothing to do with the State Department. That promise was broken immediately. You gave a donation to the state, to the foundation, you had special access to Hillary Clinton. Now, I'm upset about this, but I've been upset about it for a long time because I knew nothing was going to happen. Attorney General Barr needs to be held accountable on this area. He needs to let Americans know what he thinks about the Clinton email investigation by the Justice Department under Barack Obama and the FBI under James Comey. Does he agree with James Comey giving Hillary Clinton a get-out-of-jail-free card? And if he doesn't agree, what is he doing about it? Why hasn't he been asked these questions? I like Attorney General Barr. Every time he talks publicly, thinking, wow, I'm glad he's Attorney General. But the proof is in the pudding, though, isn't it? You can give great speeches, but we want, you can talk about the issues in a good way, in an effective way, but we want accountability. And I haven't seen any evidence of this. In fact, I've seen the opposite. The Justice Department is defending Hillary Clinton.
Coming up next, we have Pachinik being interviewed by Alex Jones about the geopolitical, you could say, mechanizations involving Soleimani. So anyway, here we go with that.
I mean, this if it succeeds, we could probably say is a success for America and for President Trump, which I hope it is. Obviously, we all have mixed feelings about it, but it is what it is. But what about the letter? We had the Iraqi president last week saying, hey, the U.S. is pulling out. I've talked to Trump. I've talked to their people. Is that true or not? Then this letter leaks out. This Defense Department letter that says they're pulling out but wasn't official, but they admit was a real letter. There's obviously a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Do you have any information on that, Doctor?
Well, the key thing to remember is what I've been saying for years, and this is still true, and it came about. I said, number one, Putin will take over the Middle East with our agreement. This is what we have said for years, and Trump agrees with that. The reason we have Putin taking over, going into Syria, going into Lebanon, going into the various areas to negotiate a peace is that we need a new actor who is a close ally of the United States. Contrary to what the neocons say or anybody else, Russia is not our enemy. It's our closest ally. Secondly, I said Erdogan will be the predominant Sunni power in the Middle East, and he is. He has gone into Libya, which was, remember, that was the biggest mistake by Hillary Clinton and Obama, and made a disaster, killing thousands and thousands of people, destroying a country. And now Erdogan has to go in and serve as our surrogate. Number three, I predict Iran will come back as an ally. It will make deals with us, economic deals in particular, to diversify its economy away from oil, which we can do. And Trump clearly said it is a great country, which I've said. I've visited it. I worked with Khomeini. I've worked with a lot of the Iranians, and they want to build up a country where 40% of the people are kids. So all three elements strategically are working together. This was predictable years ago. Why is
it
that
the analysis is that Soleimani was basically on a power trip, expansionist. He already almost ran Iran. And at a gut level, I kind of felt like that the Ayatollah might have been somehow green lighting that they weren't really going to do much if Soleimani went out because they were rivals of each other. And I thought, I bet they warned the U.S. they were firing the missiles. Well, that's now been confirmed today. The Iranian government's come out and said that basically this whole thing was kabuki. Thank God our missiles shot those down, because we had folks send us shots of the missiles that hit on the base and outside the base. And now,
you gotta, so, your audience has to understand one thing. We don't just have missiles coming in strategically. We have missiles 24/7 by the CIA above Iran. That has been there for years, and the Iranians knew it. What we did was to take the MQ-9 Reaper missile and travel 1,500 miles, 50,000 feet, and bring it down. But the Iranians knew we have had missiles and we have drones up there for years. So that's not the unusual part. The unusual part is that they didn't believe that Soleimani would be taken out with his assistant. Now Trump has basically said, this is my foreign policy. We're going to get out of the Middle East.
But let's go back. Do you think there's a back channel, not with Kerry and Obama and all those people, to the Ayatollahs anymore? We know they were working with Soleimani. Do you think the Ayatollah, at some level, it was telegraphed that we were going to kill Soleimani?
I think he had, let me put it this way, in order not to embarrass him or his father, they're very smart. They had an unusual understanding that Soleimani was a problem. I've said it for a long time. He was a self-aggrandizing boy who was a peasant, came up through the IRG, had an independent power base away from Ayatollah Khamenei. He walked around Baghdad. He wasn't hidden. He was taking pictures. He was taking selfies of himself and other things. And basically, he was the element that made Iran a deadly force overseas through proxies. Iranians themselves did not want to go to war.
So basically you're saying Iran's been defanged ahead of an offer and a deal to try to bring them back into the League of Nations.
And they will come back into the League of Nations, and NATO will help out, France will help out, Britain will help out, Russia will help out.
And that's
out.
A change in policy, because it's not the neocon destabilization policy. It's a really, what you call kind of an Eisenhowerian type stabilization policy?
Well, I would say Eisenhower, but George Marshall was the real genius of our wars and strategy, not only in war, but also as the Secretary of State. And he was a brilliant, brilliant man. So this is a man like Marshall who may not have the same education, military background, but I assure you, as a businessman, you do not create all the businesses he does without making a key decision at his point. Remember, the government is not geared for this type of individual. We don't have the ability to make momentary decisions other than in the military and other than in military intelligence.
Because Trump really is acting as the president, and I agree with you, I was just having fun with it. He did look uncomfortable because, as you said, he doesn't like to read off teleprompters, and so that's why he looked more like us.
Coming up next is Greta Thunberg speaking in Turin, Italy, December 13th, 2019. She'll be also attending the World Economic Forum that's going to be taking place at the end of January in Davos, Switzerland. And they're coming up with some kind of a policy about doing away with petrochemical, you know, energy sources and so forth. And, I mean, this is a speech that she gave just recently, within about a month, but she's going to be featured there. So this is all being built up for environmental political manipulation. Here we go with Greta.
We will make sure that we put them against the wall, and that they will have to do their job and to protect our futures. Yesterday, many climate activists were thrown out from the COP25, so therefore we strike today all around the world in solidarity, and so yeah. It is not fair that the older generations are handing over the responsibility to solve this crisis to us young people. We who have not started this crisis, it is not fair that we have to do all this. The adults are behaving as if there was no tomorrow. But there is a tomorrow. It is the tomorrow where we young people will live, and we have to fight for that tomorrow. We cannot no longer take that tomorrow for granted. We have to fight for that tomorrow as if our lives depended on it, because it does. And this decade, I cannot say enough how important this decade will be. This is a decade that will define our future. What we decide to do or not do in this decade, we will have to live with for the rest of our lives. And our children and our grandchildren, we also have to live with it.
Scare tactics, that's what we're looking at here. But our children have been conditioned into this from the kindergarten forward, so they really are believers in this environmental danger. Coming up next is a report on a virus outbreak over in China. Here we go next with that.
China's state-run Xinhua News Agency reported a team of scientists identified the new type of coronavirus after tests were run and the 59 people have been hospitalized since early December. The World Health Organization issued a statement confirming the preliminary discovery of the virus. Health officials in Hong Kong say as many as 38 people have been hospitalized in recent days after returning from Wuhan with flu or pneumonia-like symptoms. The virus can lead to sudden acute respiratory syndrome, commonly known as SARS, which struck China and Hong Kong in 2002 and 2003, killing nearly 800 people and affecting more than 8,000. In an interview with VOA, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the U.S. Institutes of Health says such viruses usually originate in animals and become significant when they spread to humans.
The interesting thing about the current virus that we're seeing in Wuhan in China does not appear to spread, certainly not readily and maybe not at all, from human to human, because there have been no cases of infection of healthcare workers who are taking care of the people with this disease, which is unlike SARS, in which the healthcare workers were vulnerable to getting infected when they were taking care of people with this disease.
The outbreak comes just days before the Lunar New Year, when millions of Chinese will be traveling by plane, train, or bus to celebrate the holiday. An official with China's transportation ministry says the agency will begin efforts to disinfect public transportation stations and cargo hubs to prevent the spread of the virus. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
That's about it for our weekly program. And we this assassination, Soleimani, was one of the main leading stories for the week. And it was upsetting to many people in Iran. But it was favored by many of the geopolitical national security advisors around around Trump. But anyway, we just got to see how this plays out. Luckily, there was no one that was killed by their incoming missiles on our two bases over there. So there's it's a cloudy issue about what kind of game the Iranians are playing. Did Soleimani, according to Pachinik and Alex Jones, they're thinking that Soleimani was actually a rival to some of the Khomeini. And so they either invited or were happy with his demise. So anyway, that's something to think about. We want to thank each and every one of you out there for listening and being a good supporter. And we always want everybody to start being good to yourself and love yourself. And most of all, forgive yourself and others. And that's truly a release out of a very wicked system of ego support of that false self. When we don't forgive, we're supporting the false self. Thus, we become trapped like thought in a thought prison. And we must go on and forgive. And forgiveness is the path to really enlightenment, and it does reflect infinite God's grace. Thank you for listening, and good night.